This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, so lots of things to think about this morning. There's plenty in the news we're going to get to in a second or two. I do want to refer to this this interesting thing that's happening. CliffCentral.com is about to kick off the second season of Decrypto. You know, we did the first one with Luna where we tried to explain it was like an idiot's guide to cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, a hell of a helpful because I was that idiot.
Yeah, and afterwards I felt like I'd learnt a lot and I hope you did too.
Yeah.
But we're about to launch the second season of
Decrypto. I was just about to say, I have a sense of the basics, but I'm still a little bit like, I feel like I have only scratched the surface.
Well, this one's going to be a lot more practical. So it'll give you very quick, easy, snackable bits of audio that will help you understand things about crypto that may have passed you by. And of course, they've got a great event on at the moment that Luna are hosting. It's called Chain Reaction 2.0. It's an evening of leading presentations, discussions, and networking aimed at all levels of knowledge encompassing blockchain and entrepreneurship. So to tell us more about what to expect from this event, we're going to speak to Paresh Dyer from the event, and we'll see who's on the list. They've got Davi Rutt, who's the founder, director, and chief economist of Efficient Group. Marcus Swanepoel is the co-founder and CEO of Luno. We've had him on this show before. He's great. Ricardo Spagni, who's the lead maintainer of Monero. He is fantastic. What an interesting dude. He really does have an amazing
cool
story
name.
To tell. Yeah, you've got to meet Ricardo if you haven't met him already, Gord. He's terrific. But Paresh Dyer, you're on the line now. Thank you, Paresh, for joining us. It sounds like a hell of a lineup. I haven't even gone through half of it, but it sounds amazing.
Hi, morning, Gareth. Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the co-founder of a company called Dexa, which stands for the Blockchain Entrepreneurs Club of South Africa. And the event that you're referring to tomorrow night, Chain Reaction 2.0, is actually the second edition of our previously oversubscribed and sold-out event, Chain Reaction. And this event really aims to bring the information of blockchain and cryptocurrencies to the public.
That sounds amazing. I see these speakers that you've got are not people who've done nothing. These are really smart individuals who are very much involved in the world of cryptocurrencies. I see you've also got Kaya Dlanga as your MC, and you've got Kirsty Bissett, the CEO of SwiftX, as the fireside chat moderator too. Tell me about the event.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a stellar lineup here, as you mentioned, Gareth. So Davi obviously is a well-known and well-respected macro economist within South Africa, and has been very vocal and a strong proponent of not just cryptocurrencies and, you know, how we can utilize that for the financial world, but also utilizing blockchain to solve some of the, you know, pertinent problems that we see within South Africa and within Africa. Obviously, Marcus Swanepoel is the CEO of well-known Luno, which is a great cryptocurrency trading exchange company. And we have Ricardo Spagni, who's an extremely colorful character and, you know, delivers great presentations around, you know, cryptocurrencies and this next feature. And, of course, he is the lead for Monero, which is a Quizity coin. Kaya Dlanga, again, another very colorful personality, well-known, well-respected moderator and keynote presenter within South Africa. And Kirsty Bissett, which runs a marketing agency. So we have quite a bit in store for our audience tomorrow night, Gareth. You know, we will be covering everything regarding cryptocurrencies, blockchain, but also very much targeting use cases, real-world use cases that we can apply within the African continent, and also some advice for budding entrepreneurs that are looking to start up companies within this particular space.
All right, you also told us that the first edition had been sold out, so this is a second one that you guys are putting on. It's at the 29th of August, so it's tomorrow night at the Radisson Blu Gautrain Hotel, that's on Rivonia Road, and it is from about 6:30, right? You come in and get registered, 6:30, 7 o'clock, they kick off with the presentations, and it ends with networking, drinks and snacks around 9 in the evening, and you should meet all these people who are speaking there, people who are otherwise involved in the cryptocurrency market and that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. So we kick off tomorrow night, 29th at 6:30. That's registration. We not only have a leading night of presentations, but as you mentioned, networking and bringing the community together. And that's really, you know, why we kicked off Dexa as a blockchain startup, to basically foster opportunities and bring an ecosystem together. Luno is our prime sponsor for this event. Luno has been a very, very strong supporter of Vector because we share the same value and the same vision of what cryptocurrencies and blockchain could bring and building out a new financial ecosystem and new financial system for the world going forward.
I think this sounds amazing. Thank you for letting us know about it, and we'll all see you at the Radisson Blu Hotel tomorrow night. Very, very good.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Paresh. There we go. So there's Paresh Dyer, who's from the Blockchain Entrepreneurs Club of South Africa, or BEXA. Sounds good, huh?
Shout out to Kirsty Bissett as well. She's going to be moderating that chat. She's an old friend of mine. What a successful, lovely, beautiful, strong, inspiring, hardworking, overachieving champion of a person. Make you hate yourself in 2 easy minutes by meeting Kirsty Bissett. But she's just lovely and deserves all of her success. And she's beautiful. Nice. She was an FHM model back in the day. And
really? She had that down too?
Oh, yeah. More than once we had her in the mag. She was a local stalwart.
That's amazing.
Without any wart. She was just a local stall.
Yeah.
No, that's terrible. That's not what I meant at all. You know what I meant. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Well, Carl says, I don't mean to nullify Kirsty's value at all or belittle her in any way, but she's really nice to look at too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm sorry that you're hot. I appreciate you for your 30 amazing characteristics, but I can't get away from the fact that you're also hot. Her husband, Barry Tuck, is a friend of mine too, and I hope that they're very happy.
Yeah, I know Barry as well.
Yeah, she's a level 10 belter, Kirsty.
All right.
Mm-hmm. It's not even in the top 5 of her most important attributes, but it's there.
But it's a notable
characteristic. Yes.
Level 10.
Loads of stuff going on social media this morning. A lot of people still talking about the Gavin Watson situation.
Has the virtue signaling put out the fires yet?
No, of course.
So everyone, please virtue signal harder. Please remember, sharing is caring.
That's right.
Post as many stories as you can about the Amazon and how outraged you are, because every outrage drops five drops of fire extinguisher.
What are
on
your
a tree.
Thoughts on this cord? Even sucks, though you've alluded,
it sucks that it's on fire. But don't somebody do something about this on social media? Like, donate to a credible charity that's working on the ground to sort that out, or fuck off.
Those are your two options.
Telling other people about it until it's fixed doesn't make you a fireman. I interviewed this amazing character, Ivan Johnson, who's also a very successful advertising guy. Mm-hmm. He's a volunteer firefighter in Cape Town. Those are hard bastards, and they do it for free, and they're dedicated as hell. And every now and then, thank God not often, one of them perishes in a horrible way because they keep Cape Town from burning down. And those oaks can virtue signal all they want. And yes, my one friend pointed out when I was being curmudgeonly about it, oh, dude, at least it's building awareness. I'm like, awareness phase, if anyone's ever been in advertising, awareness phase of this campaign is done. Now it's implementation phase. Donate some money. Send 200 South African rand, which you can buy a dickhead beer for these days. Never mind a round of drinks. And send it to people for the fires in
Amazon. We gave out some of that info yesterday. In fact, there's an organization.
Do something or shut up.
That trains indigenous people in the Amazon to fight fires as well.
Yeah.
And they need money. So if you can help them, you'd be doing a good thing.
I mean, I was just about to say, I'm not like pro-fire or anything, but then I thought about that in a broader context, and I actually am in favor of fire. We need it for civilization. But yeah, like, yes, I'm bored of people going, someone do something, and pointing at the problem. Social media.
I saw you shared something on social media. You shared like this sculpture selection at a gallery. They basically got models of giants.
I shared that like this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very pointy-twenty.
Yeah, no, it was lovely. Have a look at my
what is it?
It's just, I don't know, someone shared it with me, and it's these really amazing life-size sculptures of people, but they're about 5 times the size of regular people. Just ordinary people. The one guy's like a particularly sort of dad bod looking ordinary-ass human being. But very lifelike, almost impossible to spot that they're not real, except that the onlookers are 1/4 their size.
So, yeah, it's quite bizarre.
You should share that on the Cliff Central platforms or whatever, because it's just interesting. It's just some lovely art.
People like art.
Some people like art. Like Papa Roach's, who do you trust? That kind of high art some people like.
Yeah, sure.
Just by that, I mean art you enjoy more when you're high.
Golden Axe and Papa Roach. Those are my two takeaways from this morning.
And Mortal Kombat. But you knew about that already.
I knew
you
the
couldn't
name,
help
I had
it.
No idea.
Mortal Kombat have just released the first combat pack, which features the Terminator, Spawn, Shang Tsung, Nightwolf, and Sindel, and the Joker. And I cannot fucking wait.
Yeah, judging by the glint in your eyes, this is a big deal.
There was a notice that was put up at Pick and Pay. Attention, customers. Please be advised that we do not accept SASSA cards. That's the South African Social Security Association or South African Social Security, whatever it's called. You know, the grants, the welfare side of what we do in this country. We do not accept those cards for liquor, cigarettes, and airtime payments.
Oh.
Because people have been using their SASSA grants for liquor, cigarettes, and airtime payments.
Yeah, I mean, I've got mixed views on that sort of thing. You've got to stay connected to society, and when your vices in life are the only joy you have access to. Look, I'm not saying if you're broke as a joke, your best first thing you should be spending your money on is that stuff. Data, arguably, you need in order to be competitive in business. I just think, like, to judge others.
These people are not in
to
business.
To judge others
if
who can't afford.
If you're getting a grant, if you're getting a grant, you're not in business.
No, I know.
I'm just being responsible.
All I'm saying is that I tread lightly on that topic because there's always a bit more to it. Like, I watched a fascinating talk by one of the anthropology lecturers at UCT many years ago about how people complain about the satellite dishes on the informal settlements, but there's like a major psychological reason for needing to be connected to the outside world, or else you start killing people. So there's a broader context that's we won't get into now because it's long and boring, but yes,
I hear
things
you.
That make you.
But
go,
I mean, with that said, I will agree. If I'm not able to put Poloni on my Albany, I'm not going to be buying cigarettes. I will quit cigarettes like I did years ago.
Well, Gord, I've been waiting for you to hear some of your comments around the story. You know, if we're going to talk about Gavin Watson being the story that keeps on giving, can we also just give a Jeffrey Epstein update now?
Right.
Ooh, fill me right in.
He's still dead, right?
Been waiting for me to say that to you for a long time. I know.
Or has he been discovered on an island somewhere?
No, he had enough bad days on islands. So I hope he's not there. I hope he really is. Dead and gone, and that's it. So recently, his lawyers, actually yesterday, his defense lawyer has said that they are very skeptical that Jeffrey Epstein died by hanging himself in jail.
Yes.
And they say there's something else at play here. They say that the injuries that Jeffrey suffered are far more consistent with assault than suicide. Ooh. This is what his lawyers are actually telling the judge who's working on this case during a hearing. So broken bones were found in Epstein's neck. This is what the autopsy has revealed. The autopsy was done a couple of days after he died on August the 10th. Uh-huh. And such fractures are somewhat more common in cases of strangulation than in hanging.
So this
and
is the
then,
guy.
Of course, we have Crooked Hillary, fuck.
This is the one where, just to fill myself and people who maybe don't know, in this is the guy who fucked with the Clintons and then they killed himself.
Yes.
Okay.
They killed himself.
Do you want
to? That's right. That's the guy.
I don't know. Do you want to sneak in an allegedly there?
That's what I've heard. I mean, I don't know the story. I'm here. I'm asking you to verify if my facts are more or less correct.
Yeah,
my alternative facts.
Yeah, they're quite spot on.
Give
right
or take.
Now. Yeah. They also his legal team also told the judge yesterday that when they last spoke to him, this is Jeffrey, before his death, they didn't see a despairing, despondent, or suicidal person. So if we do follow the story that he commits suicide, his legal team is saying, nope, this is all very odd to us.
Yeah. To be fair, while this is anecdotal and in no way evidence, I have known some of my friends that tragically have taken their own lives. One in particular was the last oak. The last oak you would have expected it from.
And there was no...
And there was no foul play at play. He chucked himself out a window and texted some people before he did it.
But you could have seen him a day before and you would have thought he was fine.
Just if you had to make a list of everyone you knew of who was going to off themselves, he would be at the bottom of everyone's list.
Okay.
Happiest oak by all outward appearances and in the world.
Let's go back to something more concrete then to base our decision on. What the autopsy says.
Yes.
Assault marks when the Clintons have killed himself.
I mean, we can't avoid that.
Yeah.
Oh, this is odd. So the legal team was speaking yesterday.
Don't beat the shit out of yourself before you kill yourself.
Right.
It confuses everything, Lord. And it's also unnecessary. If you want it to be slow, shitty, and difficult, just jump out of a boat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
And wait
That's
for the
a slow, horrible way. It's tiring and painful to beat the crap out of yourself before a Clinton kills yourself.
Oh, no. His lawyers were speaking yesterday at a hearing, and the whole proceedings were where the prosecutors were seeking the dismissal of the child sex trafficking charges against Jeffrey as a result of his death. They want all of those dropped, but lest we forget, there are more than 20 alleged victims of Jeffrey who have spoken or had comments during these hearings.
Did you see the story about the one guy from Love Island who was blinded in one eye by a champagne cork on a holiday in Ibiza?
No.
Fuck, that's a bummer.
Wait, like permanently blinded or like
way to get
he needs an eye patch for
Series
now.
3 contestant Theo Campbell was reportedly partying in Ibiza with his girlfriend Kaz Crosley when someone popped a bottle of champagne and the cork flew straight into his eye. Updating his fans on Instagram.
Oh, dude.
Updating his fans on Instagram, he wrote today, so yeah, basically 2 hour surgeries later, after a really unfortunate accident, I've lost all vision in my right eye as it got split in half. Who would have thought a champagne cork would be the end of me? But I still have one eye left, looking at the bright side of things.
Well, that's a good attitude. I mean, as long as you don't take it personally, unless the person like hugely irresponsibly swung this thing right in front of your face as they popped it. That's one of those things where you just got to go, shit,
oh, man,
that's unlucky. I have a friend who I love dearly, but she takes everything bloody personally. And she's an angry feminist. And she and I went to go watch Yellow Wolf play, and he's a famous rapper, but like, you know, underground enough that it wasn't a stadium concert, but popular enough that he packed out the Assembly in Cape Town. It was one of the best shows I've ever been to.
Yes.
And we were kind of like at the back, but in a small venue, you're still kind of a tennis court and a half away from the front, so it was fine. And there's lights and everything, and Yellow Wolf's going off his tits. Anyone who knows Yellow Wolf will know it's a rowdy show. And he sort of downed a beer while crowd surfing, crushed it into almost completely flat, so now it's quite disc-like, and flung it up into the air.
Oh, shit.
And it went up into the air, into the lights, spinning, spinning, spinning. I saw it. I watched the whole thing. I watched it fly, watched it come towards us, thought, shit, that's coming close to us.
Oh, no.
And it hit her right between the eyes.
Oh.
And gave her this tiny little nick right on the bit of your nose that's between your eyes, the bridge. And like, she literally was, as angry feminists will find a way to do, she was furious about it. It was dreadfully irresponsible. It was deliberate, throwing beers at the crowd. You should be shocked, shamed, and locked down. And I'm like, you couldn't, for $10 million, make that shot if you were trying to make it on purpose.
No.
And at a Yellow Wolf concert where people are stage diving and like all hell's breaking loose, it's kind of on you to watch the show and check that it's like
that you're not in the line of fire.
I accidentally got sucked into a Devil Driver mosh pit once by being too close to the front at Download in 2006,
a
Devil Driver are a band that play very heavy music, and they're known for their massive circle pits, and the idea is that when the music starts, the circle pit opens up and it turns into a massive circular circle pit.
Okay.
But if you kind of get, generally speaking, the people in the middle know they're going to get sucked into it, and they're there for that reason. But it sucks in some of the outside as well. And like, you get sucked into like a stampede of thousands of people running in a circle. And I was like, not in the shape for it, and tired from the festival. And as I came around on my first lap, so a friend of mine saw me go in. This was a huge concert, right? And the size of the circle, I don't know, pi r squared divided by the radius of the amount of people, it was like running around two Olympic swimming pools. It was big, and I was like running for my life. If you fall, you get trampled, but you can't really fall because the people are bouncing you upright again. And my one friend saw it happen, and he waited for me to come all the way around, and then like grabbed me and threw us both out, and I landed on the grass like panting, out of breath, and almost dead. Point is, like, shit happens at concerts, and you gotta know, like, if you don't want to be in the circle pit, stand on the periphery.
Okay.
don't know how we even got on this topic.
What was it called? The Devils?
Devil Driver.
Devil Driver, yeah. Circle Pit.
They've got some really good songs. One called End of the Line, another one called Clouds Over California. It's Des Fafara who famously started Coal Chamber, his follow-up project.
All right, stop.
I like metal.
Gee, you need to branch out and let your alternate characters do a show. Your Benoni bra, your Cockney fella, etc. Mavis or Doris.
Yeah. Gareth and I actually talked about this when I was first trying to get involved in the station, but living in Cape Town, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We did a few skits, a lot of Hard Eddie skits, and we talked about some of my other characters, like news reporter Dixon Balls with the news that matters. But, you know, we should probably think about it. We should probably revisit that. Because GC does a top accent as well, and I think between the two of us, we could do a skit show with quite a rich depth of characters. It's a good idea.
No, for sure. Did Gord stop smoking because he ran out of Poloni? Just kidding.
That's from the Sasa comment.
I don't know
That's from
what
Wendell.
That's meant to mean, but I probably would have been the other way around. South Africa probably would have run out of Poloni because I was smoking. But yes, I did stop smoking. Stupid habit. I brought it back from Amsterdam with me, and about 3 weeks and 8 kilos later, I decided it was a dumb way to live life.
So here's something else to bring up just quickly. I think we are in interesting times with the return of old school comics. Remember a couple of weeks ago, it was big news that Eddie Murphy has signed this like $60 million deal with Netflix. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle.
God, I
also
hope he's funny again. I've been waiting for
years. I've been waiting for years too, yeah?
Let's see. Dave Chappelle has signed on with Netflix ages ago, and he's just recently released his new Netflix stand-up special.
Didn't he release like three at the same time because he had them all already?
Well, here's the latest one called Sticks and Stones. I have been fascinated by the reviews because one of the reviews says, Dave Chappelle's return to Netflix is possibly the most politically incorrect 1 hour and 5 minutes on TV.
And really?
Oh, I think these old school comics are coming in and they don't give a flying anything at this point.
This is what we need. We need a whole wave of comedians who are not trying to be politicians. Who are going to go out
tell it like it is.
And they're gonna say outrageous and offensive and hideous things.
So it's only been 2 seconds of the special being out. But of course now he's been accused of racism, transphobia, and also what some reviewers calling stale bigotry.
I was watching a Joe Rogan episode, and I can't remember who with, but somebody put it really, really well in a way that made me... People being offensive with taboo topics and socially, politically incorrect, blah, 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 what. It's only... You can feel it's cringeworthy and upsetting when the person doesn't know or fully understand that what they're saying is offensive or fully grasp why. So I crack this joke, fat people, and you're like you think that's funny in the wrong way. And you can sense when the person knows that it's like taboo. They know that they're trying to pull a shock value one. You know that they're like, what's that guy called? Anthony
Bourdain?
No. Oh. God, he's cuck funny, but he's got a Anthony Kaspelnik or something. I will look it up and mention it right now. The funniest.
Jesselnik.
That's the one. Anthony Jesselnik. It is the most, and Sarah Silverman. Mm-hmm. The most offensive shit you can imagine. But you know that they're up there and in their own way condemning this kind of thought.
Yes.
By making fun of it.
Love it.
And then it's hysterical because you know the person understands that what they're making fun of is bad shit.
Their intention isn't
whereas
to just
if it's
be
your, if it's someone's
horrible.
Racist uncle at a braai making a joke about the blacks, it's fucking terrible. You know, it's awkward and you wish you could run away and part of you wants to fight them and the other part just wants to leave.
A joke about
the blacks. And don't get me started on the gays. If Jesus wanted everyone to be gay, he wouldn't have made blacks in the first place. Okay, now watch me get socially lynched because someone isolates just that part of the conversation.
Just edit that part
Gordon
out.
Gordon Laws says gays and blacks are a mistake of God.
I'll get my...
I don't believe in God and I love gay people and
you.
Gays. Especially black gays. Just saying.
Yeah, thanks, Gord. Glad you say that sitting next to me.
This was a joke at the expense of racist uncles who I know are bad, and that's why it's okay.
Why is it always uncles?
They are, dude. Everybody's got that uncle. And like, yeah, see.
Just messy, doesn't know when to shut up, uncle.
No one ever says aunt, cousin, no, mom, it's dad. Everybody,
but you got the drunk auntie. You got the drunk auntie starts karaokeing at 3 p.m.
But you also the
I don't know the words. Somewhere over the rainbow. And you're just like, I hate this. I hate this.
Ask Sia about his.
Oh, my grand aunt.
Your grand,
I know that's where you're going to go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Grand aunt is your grandmother's sister.
Sister, yes. She's a proper alcoholic.
Yeah, she walks around in a dressing gown the whole time.
I love her already.
She's rude to everyone.
Bless her. Mm-hmm. She's the Prince Philip of the family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's one dressing gown of hers in particular. You know those old ones that no one should own anymore because it's seen better days. That
it's almost
made
of velour. It's like,
well, where the velour is rubbed off, and it's almost like the substrate that they stitch the velour into is showing in patches.
Yeah, and there are little rips and tears, and there's one tear in particular, and we've raised this up to her many a time, and she doesn't seem to care.
What, a titty pops
up? One of the tears just below her boob. So
and this
just,
is grandma age titty.
Yes, and her name is Tabitha.
Mm. Oh, she's the best. I love her. She can stay.
So her boob will just
pop
out.
The racist bri uncle is always like the worst because you know, like, while you want to stand up to them, and sometimes maybe you do, I'll be like, no, that's not actually okay to say. Mm. And then the whole family, look, to be fair, I don't actually have any racist uncles. I mean, when there is someone that's out of line, I'll cross the awkwardness threshold and just say something like, listen, that's not funny to me. Let's rather not say that. But like, in certain cases, it's like, it will fuck up the whole dynamic of the otherwise nice rest of the family to say anything. And you sit there cringing and going, God, this joke's not funny. Mm-hmm. And one or two people will be like, ha, okay, Roy. Ha. And it's like, it's Roy who doesn't know that his joke isn't funny and why that shouldn't make the joke.
So do you think something like, you know, the Dave Chappelle's coming back and not mincing their words is a good thing?
Look, I haven't seen the show, but generally speaking, these dudes know that what they're making fun of is at its core in some way not all right.
Well,
inequity that makes them make the joke about how the black kids get shot by the police. They know that is a massive problem. They're pointing out a societal issue, but doing so in a way that almost laughs at it or does laugh at it. But again, my point was that this, whoever it was on Joe Rogan, really succinctly made me understand. It's funny when the person clearly knows it's not funny.
Let me give you some of the jokes that have people going from the Netflix special. This isn't a spoiler alert, but I just do find these funny. So Dave Chappelle touches on the Michael Jackson accusers. Remember that whole Leaving Neverland documentary?
Yes.
also known as Leaving Credibility Land.
Mm-hmm.
Dave says he doesn't believe them because, come on, I know it seems harsh, but someone's got to teach these kids there's no such thing as a free trip to Hawaii.
Oh, but they're kids, though. But they're fucking parents. But we've been through
so
this.
So you just think you can go all around the world and you can eat for free and stay at hotels for free? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Fed.
He goes on to talk about the LGBTQ+ community, and he refers to them as the alphabet people.
Yeah.
Love Dave Chappelle.
Could you have a more contrived acronym? Like, just call them everyone except white dudes.
And then he also touches on talking about his friend and the comedian, Louis C.K. And this is the comedian who was also wrapped up in the Me Too movement for masturbating.
He liked to show his junk to people.
Mm.
Yeah, sometimes fap it around a bit.
He liked to masturbate in front of like Sarah Silverman and her sister.
And then Dave says he didn't
I don't know if I could manage that. I mean, Sarah Silverman's sexy in her own way, in my humble opinion.
She is.
She's incredible as a comic, so her sexiness is irrelevant. Like, I kind of see it, but also not really. Anyway, but hey, you know, Louis C.K., dig what you dig, mate.
Well, Dave on Louis C.K. says he didn't do anything that you can call the police for.
Yeah, that's
I'm
true.
Pretty sure if somebody asks you if they can masturbate in front of you and there's an implication that it will further your business career and you agree even under duress, you probably can't call the police for that.
No,
but if someone like walks up to you in a public space or in your own home and starts having a fap, if they're not expressly invited to do so, Even in the public space, you still can't invite a fat.
Well, in conclusion, there was one blogger who commented on this saying, you know, yikes, he really wants people to cancel him. And Dave responded saying, cancel culture is exactly why he's doing this. Because he says, that's why I don't...
Call out culture and cancel culture. Who the fuck are you to decide who can and can't have a voice? Everybody rides on the pre-accepted... premise that they are right to begin with. We don't have to debate whether I'm right or not. I don't have to prove that I'm right. I'm right and therefore can decide who's wrong. Fuck off.
Yeah, nobody gave you that
and
power.
It screws up real causes like equal pay for different genders and the right to safety and that kind of shit. People ignore you.
Well, I heard
they ignore the 20% of you that's not self-serving bullshit because the 80% that self-serving virtue signaling bullshit
day,
makes us not listen.
Bill Maher, who I do listen to from time to time, and he's really good. He had a go at these two freshman congresswomen, Ilhan Omar and what's the other one's name, Rashida Tlaib. And he said to them that, you know, that this whole anti-Israel thing of theirs is patently, it's anti-Semitic. That's what the basis of it is. And he had a go at them. Now, he's a left-leaning guy. And Bill's very
and
supportive.
And a comedian who knows when his jokes are funny and why.
Well, correct. He's also got a really good grip on not being politically correct. His show used to be called Politically Incorrect. So Bill Maher says this stuff. It's unpopular with the left. And then these two congresswomen call for him to be cancelled. This is what it's boiled down. Like, if you don't like something gets said that you don't agree with, it must be cancelled.
Somebody should start, and the danger of this is that it might lean so right that it becomes Fox, but somebody should start the cancelled network.
Where people are cancelled
for fuck all. Somebody smart needs to be in charge of it, because there will be the occasional person who deserves to be fucking cancelled.
Yeah.
Like, some people are harmful with their speech. But at the same time, these virtually signalling social police assholes calling for people to be cancelled, lots of them deserve to be bloody cancelled for being the nastiest people. There is nothing nastier than an asshole with a good cause. You know, I'm a total prick durst that just wants to be hateful and fight and be a cock to everyone.
There's
a fair cause. Let me use that to be a dick to everybody.
Yeah, woke scolds.
Fucking asshole.
All right,
I'm so looking forward to this special. It's called
Look at that. You've got a little plastic shopping packet of good cause in your hand. The rest of you's a puss. Sorry, I got triggered. Hashtag triggered.
It's just lovely. Oh, my God. All right, what is your take on reproductive genetics, testing DNA or designer babies?
Do it.
We've been touching on this recently on the show, so we decided to get an expert in to talk about this matter with us. Kim Hewlett's the CEO and the chief researcher at Next Biosciences and a South African Singularity University faculty member. This morning, she's going to share with us some advances in stem cell genetic research, which are unlocking solutions to medical challenges around the world. It's time for us to learn, rather than just foist our opinions on other people. So we thought we'd get the expert in, and we talked to Kim this morning. Hey, Kim, how are you?
I'm great, thanks, Gareth, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Nice of you to come and join us. You would have seen we get very passionate about things here.
See that.
Soz.
Just a little.
I promise you I'll keep you away from Gord for the course of the morning.
I am fascinated by this topic.
I'm worried about you, Gord.
To be perfectly honest, though, this kind of thing fascinates me. I'm a layperson science enthusiast, and I'm really interested in that. I've been looking forward to this, so I will try not to be a
awesome.
Dick.
Awesome.
So let's just talk about this. First of all, what is your company, Next Biosciences? Tell me about that.
So Next Biosciences is a biotech company, and we are based in Midrand, and we're involved in stem cells, genetics, and biologics.
Can anyone come to you and say, listen, we want you to grow some stem cells, or we want you to figure out whether our genome has some weird sequencing in it? What kinds of services do you offer, and is it open to the public, or do you do stuff for medical companies?
So what we mainly involved in, we do umbilical cord blood stem cell storage for babies.
It's too late for me on that front.
Yeah, too late for you, but we can actually collect your fat, if you like, and store those stem cells for you.
You can collect mine.
I got spare. Get a big lot of storage.
I got spare fat for anyone who's O positive. Like, we could do, seriously, a province. So, hook them up.
So what do you do with the fat?
Oh, God.
Hang on. You harvest some of the fat and then what? You get those adipose cells?
Yes, the mesenchymal stem cells, and then we bank and store those and then for future potential medical use.
My understanding, which may be incorrect, but my understanding was that, you know, initially embryonic stem cells were the only sort of viable source, but now apparently we can get them from other places. Like someone told me something about the nose. There's a tissue in the nose that produces stem cells. That may be wrong, but inform me if there are other sources in the body.
Gord's asking you to tell him because he knows nothing.
Yeah, and I'm saying, where can we get stem cells? Where can we get stem cells from an individual that's already a fully grown adult that doesn't involve embryos, if anywhere?
So stem cells are really resident in all your, you know, all your organs of the body, and the best place, the easiest place to collect them is at birth, because it's medical waste, normally just gets thrown away. But as an adult, the easiest way to collect is from your adipose tissue. It's got abundant form of stem cells, and they're quite versatile. There's quite a lot you can do with it.
Hmm.
A lot of it's not yet clinically available.
And that's fat, essentially.
Yes, okay. Fat. Okay. Got great storage.
Adipose tissue, I know the term, but some of our listeners might not.
Excuse us.
So if you carry a lot of weight, you're quite advantageous. You got a lot of stem cells.
Okay, so you said for potential future use, because we haven't figured out exactly how to use those stem cells in the adipose tissue to grow perhaps new organs or to fix tissue that's been, you know, damaged in a burn victim, for example, that kind of thing.
Correct.
But it can also be used to just, if the stem cells, as I understand it, are the place where the tissue regenerates, then those should be able to generate nerve tissue, muscle tissue.
Correct.
Glands and cells that do very peculiar functions in the body, all of them effectively.
No, that's correct. So there's lots of work going on, and I think the most common usage at the moment is an aesthetic surgery. So people are using fat and complementing it with the stem cells for aesthetic, say for reconstructing of breast and for aesthetic purposes, youthful regeneration,
cartilage,
yes. Okay. Arthritis and cartilage regeneration. So there's a lot of that work.
Because I've heard it's really fantastic. A person I know, well, rather that I know of, had like a keyhole surgery on their rotator cuff and had their whole gym, big gym enthusiast, had their whole, that whole mission. They couldn't lift anything because the rotators were just so gone. And it had keyhole on both rotators and they'd been okay for a while and then gone again for a while. Totally couldn't do any more weightlifting, and had stem cell surgery in some other country, wealthy as hell this person, and could afford it, and apparently that fixed them. Like their damaged joint was like, both joints after a series of stem cell treatments were good as new. And I'm interested in how that works. So mechanical damage, in other words, can be repaired.
There's a lot of work going on in that. I think for me, because we're working mainly in the preconception to post-birth market, I think the most fascinating thing for us is the stem cells you collect from the placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And they,
because as you said, otherwise it gets thrown away. So
yes, and these stem cells are like virgin cells. They're not like in your body, they become aged. So it's these virgin stem cells, and there's a lot of work happening in that. And for instance, there's even a clinic that's been set up in the island of Bimini, and they're using these placental stem cells for longevity injections. And all the really wealthy and famous people are going there.
Where's Bimini?
Bimini is an island in the Bahamas.
Ooh,
yeah, it sounds like a kick-ass place.
And people swear by these injections. Anyway, look, this is all, it's going into the future. And
GC reverse ages, so when he comes back from Bimini, he'll be an infant.
Yeah, I think he knows
someone
exactly
will have to
Bimini
hold
is.
Him by the microphone.
Like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right,
let's just talk for a minute about how big this whole genetic and biomedical business is in South Africa. I mean, you're not the only one, but I can't imagine there are that many, because South Africa's fairly behind the curve in terms of world standards, right?
Yes and no. It depends.
We don't have enough rich people to be able to afford this stuff.
Oh, we have rich people.
Not enough to afford.
And they should damn well be paying for the medical care of everyone else, Gareth.
Just shut up. Please, can we have Kim answer this?
There are different aspects of genetics. So if I'm just broadly just explaining, there's like oncology genetics to test for if you've got predispositions for cancers. There is lifestyle genetics, so that's being genetically tested to see what is suitable for you in terms of nutrition and what drugs work for you. So all the lifestyle
stuff. So
that's
a real thing, like different food genetically will, because I've always been wondering if blood type dieting is bullshit or not. So like there's a genetic thing of like you're a person Correct. That can handle lactose, for example, better than someone
Yes.
else.
So they are genetic, and they're genetic tests you can do with that. But I think the most important thing about genetic testing you understand is we're only just at the beginning of understanding what all the genes can do. So I almost like to say the race is on around the world to sequence as many genomes as you can, and then people are trying to work out which genes are responsible for which traits and which diseases. So we're still at the very early stages of that. So even if you do know your whole genetic makeup, it doesn't... You're still trying to figure out.
Yeah. So you can see if there's a gene or not, or if it's active or not, but you might not know what it could potentially do.
Maybe we can start to zero in on where certain
Correct.
Markers are located. And you know, you listen to people like Dr. Craig Venter, who's obviously one of the world's most preeminent fans of the genomic sequencing. This guy, he's kind of disappointed with the fact that the research hasn't delivered as much as it might.
Correct. So he sequenced, geez, I don't know how many. I went to his lab in, I was there a few years ago, so I've had my whole genome sequenced. I was the 13th person
Wow.
to have that done. And
worldwide or in SA?
Well, from Dr. Craig Venter.
Amazing.
And I mean, you get this thick file. There is just so much data. It's almost impossible to go through it. And there's a number of variants of unknown significance. They don't even know what it means. But in everyone, you have, you know, they just can't interpret all this
stuff. Did they discover some useful and pertinent information from yours?
I think the one thing that, you know, they told me I have got a predisposition to, I like sugar far too much, and I should be careful because I'm predisposed to potentially diabetes. So it does make me aware of that.
You don't look like you're getting diabetic anytime.
Yeah, you look like you can handle a chocolate. Yeah, you look just fine.
But from him sequencing people, you know, they have picked up, you know, if you predispose, and they've actually picked up like minor, well, they do complete body scans and that, and they picked up the beginnings of tumors. And his big thing is about early detection. If you can detect something early, then you got a chance of fixing it. So that's on... So let me just go back to the conversation on the other side. So there's various levels of genetic testing, and we're focusing here in South Africa at our laboratory on reproductive genetic testing. And that to me is the exciting part. So So people undergoing IVF, people have undergone IVF for fertility reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can now do, you know, it was really the fertility doctor would just choose hot luck. You just go choose a few embryos, put them in, and hope for the best. We can now test those embryos to actually see that they're healthy embryos. So we do a high-level chromosome.
And you can check whether they're the most viable possible embryos?
So we do a screening test, and on that screening test is a chromosomal test. So we just check to see that it's high-level, so any missing or extra chromosomes.
Yeah, so you don't end up with Down syndrome kids and that
Correct,
kind of thing.
Correct. And then if you transfer the healthy ones, then you've got a better chance of a successful pregnancy and not having a baby with a serious
because,
genetic
I mean,
anomaly. Yeah,
wow. We're taking for granted in this room, people understand that like from one set of parents, each embryo is as different as siblings would be. So you can pick for the ones with the better traits, and if you were to have a litter of 10 children, they wouldn't all be equally correct. Predisposed to the same problems just because the parents are the same.
That's correct. So where it's really going is, so that's where technology currently is, but where we are with parents, if you know you've got a serious history or a serious medical history of genetic disorders in your family, you can undergo carrier screening. We can assess the risk of you transferring one of those diseases onto your babies, and then you can decide, okay, look, we're going to undergo IVF. We can then do special testing on that embryo for a specific disease.
And find the ones that don't have the trait.
Correct. So you can actually out...
Even if they might be in the vast minority, even if it's like one in 10 that doesn't have the trait, you can find that
we
one.
We can find that embryo, and then that's the amazing. Embryo you can transfer.
And Kim, this is obviously the first step in the direction of what people have termed designer babies. And there's a lot of... There's a lot of made-up nonsense and bad press around this, that people think, oh, you're messing with God, you're messing with the way that nature intended things to be. And I mean, humans have been doing this for years. Yeah. There's no difference between this and choosing to have good nutrition while you're pregnant as a mother, or not drinking, for example, or any of these things. These are the things that you
and
try to do.
And trying to decide what time of year to have kids because, you know, the ones that are born earlier in the year have an advantage in primary school.
Correct.
It's all just little... But I mean...
I mean, we've been doing it for years. If you think about it.
Can we make some scary-ass chimeras and create an army of supervillains?
Just slow down. Kim was going to... You were going to say?
No, I'm just... You're absolutely right, Gareth. And in a way, we have been doing it for many years. Just think about people just going... Women wanting to get a sperm donor. You know, you get a menu and you go, well, this guy, well, he's super intelligent or athletic, he's got blue eyes.
Yeah, sure.
So we're kind of already doing that.
Good point.
And if you now... So the whole key point is... You already made embryos with your partner. They're yours genetically, completely. If you're now going to select out the ones with the disease-free, the ones you don't want to pass on for future generations.
What kind of cruel psychopath would want, if they could stop that, to allow it to happen? Isn't that the reverse argument?
That's exactly right.
People say, well, I don't think it's fair to give these kids a genetic advantage by choosing them and not allowing nature to make that decision.
But nature's just randomness. It's entropy by definition. It's like
nature's just made the embryo. So the point is we're not genetically changing anything. Those are your genetic embryos. They're related to you. So if
just picking the best one.
Yeah, so if you've already got 10 and they you choose the healthy ones.
If I ever decide to have a kid, I'm coming straight to your lab.
Yeah,
honestly. And we're going to make it in the lab. We're not involving any nature or any other crap.
Can you cause certain genes to activate or not activate in the embryo? Or are you simply going through the ones that nature, quote unquote, creates and picking and finding the best ones out of the batch?
Can
you tailor them?
So at the moment where the tech is, we can go to right down to a single gene disorder and go and select to make sure that embryo doesn't carry that specific disease.
But you can't find it and switch it off.
No,
that comes later through epigenetics. That's a whole complicated process.
And CRISPR.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want bat wings.
That's not going to happen, Gord.
But when you can choose embryos, I don't even think the point of engineering is almost moot, because if you can create a lot of embryos, then you can just select what you'd like. So it's the whole point where we are now. Even from a 5-day-old embryo, we can tell you the sex of the baby. And it's illegal in South Africa. But if you've got your 5 embryos and you know that they're 5 healthy ones and you've got 4 girls, is it so bad to choose the boy?
Why is this stuff illegal in South Africa? What kind of backward rules have we got in place from a bunch of people who probably don't have a lot to do with medicine? Politicians. Where did this come from?
It's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's from the past. In most of the countries, it's illegal, except in the US and Mexico, apparently.
Really?
Yes.
And stem cell research in general is still banned in a lot of countries, right?
Not really. It just depends where you are. So there's a lot of research going on. I think the difference is when you start using it clinically, because you got to make sure that it's, you know, it can work and you're not causing harm to anyone. So that's a completely different area.
To play devil's advocate on the argument against this kind of stuff, what do you do with the embryos that you... Because you said you can see it's sex from 5 days, it's gender from 5 days, whatever. But if that's already starting to develop, like, what happens to the ones you don't execute with? Like, now you've got little tiny baby individual snowflake people with souls that Jesus made, excuse me, and like you've got like 30 that you didn't choose. What happens to them?
Flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
No, that's
like most men do probably on average once a day or so.
What do you do with them?
So we don't work with that. So we work with all the fertility labs that create the embryos. So we don't work in any of that. And they cryogenically freeze and store those embryos. We then... cells get biopsies from those embryos, and that's what we test to make sure which are the healthy ones. So yes, there are storage tanks with embryos waiting to be hatched. It is a bit freaky, especially if you know, you start identifying with them, like, well, you know, that's a girl, that's a boy, you've got 3 boys waiting to be hatched. That does freak people out.
Hatched is amazing. A cool term.
I like that.
Kind of strange.
So
cool.
Interesting, you mentioned Craig Fenter earlier. So he said to me, was a few years ago, he was already close to being able to generate a photo of what your child can look like at the age of 18 from the embryo.
That's also like moving so slightly cool. away from the embryonic stuff. Like, that's really cool if there's like viable DNA cells in old remains, even if it's like very old, that you could then digitally reconstruct what this creature would have properly looked like. Because I mean, okay, like I know there's never, if maybe very seldom, but basically never like viable DNA in, say, dinosaur fossils. But they find stuff in amber that's like millions of years old with some DNA in it. So, and you could reconstruct a 3D model of what this massive dragonfly would have been like.
So let me tell you, George Church, who's in Boston, he's like a world-renowned geneticist. He's working on what you call the de-extinction of animals. And where he's taken the DNA of the woolly mammoth and wanting to insert that into lab-grown elephant cells to try and regrow the woolly mammoth.
So imagine you could go to the zoo and see a woolly mammoth.
And dodos. Well, I would prefer it if it was like a tundra reserve of hundreds of kilometers of free roaming tundra for the mammoths to just be free on. But yes, it would be totally rad. Some people are supremely against it, but at the same time, this was not a natural extinction. I mean, humans are, but I suppose you could argue natural. But like, we hunted the mammoths down, and that's how humans, as far as we know, populated North and South America. So like, we killed that shit. If we can kill it, surely we have a responsibility in a sense to bring it back.
That's interesting. Wow. Just to go a little deeper into the genetics for a moment, because I seldom have people in here I can talk to about this stuff. So we know, of course, that in the DNA, in each chromosome, we have these combinations of the four nucleotides. And in those combinations, you obviously can have certain genes that switch on and off, and this is the epigenetic variation that you're talking about. But they've still got this problem trying to figure out what the supposed junk DNA is, where there are genes that appear to be inactive. There are combinations, and sometimes these could be long strings that make up a vast proportion of the chromosome, and they're not sure what the function of that DNA is. Is there any progress being made in figuring out what that stuff is?
I think they are making progress. I'm not exactly sure what all that DNA is, but it's definitely there for a reason. There's no way that junk DNA is not... It's definitely there for a reason. So
I've heard such interesting theories postulated that this could be a place where we record memory, or where we record culture, or we record...
your spiritual nature.
I've also heard stuff that may or may not be total bollocks, but may or may not be also true, because I don't know enough. But like where, you know, the trauma of a culture can be stored. Like if you were a warring people, like the Scandinavians were very warlike for a couple thousands years, and now are kind of the opposite. But like that, like a generation of war, apparently it passes down...
it would make sense.
Trauma.
If you develop,
like the PTSD
it's the epigenetics
is passed
of that
down.
Is passed down, right. Correct.
Purely logically, Kim, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you can develop certain physical characteristics, like let's say that you get blonder the further north you go, which is exactly what happened to the Scandinavians, for example, and you get paler and you get taller. These are things that happened because of environmental factors that physically recorded into the genome and are now part of that nation's appearance. It would make sense that things that are emotional or spiritual or mental would also be registered.
But also passed
but does
down,
it?
Yes.
Because like, can you retrospectively change your DNA stuff? Like, can you in your life experience trauma that then causes your DNA to change so that when you pass it on next time you breed, it's different than before you experienced the trauma?
Yes.
Because of sadness or...
Yes, it's epigenetically passed down. So they say like our future...
It physically changes you on a cellular level when you go through some shit.
Can. So our futures, we reckon we're going to have bigger thumbs with all us...
Yeah.
Thinking on our smartphones.
And that's also apparently why we are... Is it true that that's why we have small pinkies? Because we don't climb as much these days.
Don't know about that.
Yeah, I heard that.
But that's also...
We all look down at our hands.
Kim, that's also where cancer comes from. I mean, sometimes cancer is a willful mutation of the new cells that form into something which is predatory upon other cells and does damage to them. But sometimes it's also as a result of, you know, cosmic radiation or smoking.
So here we get into the interesting debate because people get all hung up about, say, choosing the right genetics for your child, but actually genetics, and there have been lots of studies on it, only make up probably about 30% of what... You can't use genetics as an excuse. The other 70% is dependent on lifestyle and environmental factors. So, and they've done many studies on identical twins that are, you know, separated birth, reared apart, and they're completely different. Identical genetics... but it's environmental and lifestyle factors. So they count about 70%. Mm. So what you're putting in your body, environmental factors, and all those affect.
So it's like nature, cancer. Nurture, basically.
It's
like
exactly that.
You start with the same. Everybody starts with a different canvas and a different set of paints, but then also what you do with it.
Yeah. Nature, nurture. It's a fascinating debate, that. So.
Sure. I wonder if this stuff that Craig Fenter is working on, for example, and by the way, he's not South African. He's just got a,
I know, everyone thinks he's South African.
He's got a South African surname, but he's probably the preeminent pioneer in this field.
Correct.
Right?
Does he go by Fenter or Venter?
Vanter.
Yeah, Vanter. Okay.
Vanter. I'll call him Dr. Craig Vanter.
Dr. Craig Vanter.
All of Hollywood's obsessed with him too. How long did you spend with him?
I've met him a few times when I was in San Diego for Singularity, actually. Mm-hmm. There for, Singularity University.
Now you're a faculty member.
This was the
member.
Moment when the artificial intelligence rose up and started enslaving us. You were there for that.
So you are on the faculty.
Correct.
For Singularity. What does that mean?
So being on the faculty is, it's an amazing experience because you get to mix with everyone in the similar community and mindset, I should say, of the future and how fast the world is changing exponentially.
Have you spent any time with Diamandis?
I haven't spent time personally with him, but I've been to a lot of his seminars and group workshops.
Nice.
Yeah, so they're very, very inspirational people. And it's quite nice from a different culture where we sit in a lot of society of negativity and, we're all down every day, like, geez, there's so much shit going down in our country and that. And when you actually see the power of positive change and how much we can actually do, especially here in Africa, I think it's incredible.
Well, we could cure diseases. What is a savior baby?
So a savior baby is when a family's got a child and that child is desperately ill, life-threatening disease, needs a transplant, they can't find a match. And what they then do is create a baby.
Oh.
And that happens through IVF. You create the embryos and then you test those embryos to make sure that that embryo is a genetic match for that child. The child then gets
and
born.
Doesn't have the problem.
Yeah, so you test for all of that. So you test out the embryos, you implant the correct one, the baby gets born, and then you can use that baby for a transplant and save your current sibling.
Oh, but don't kill the baby.
No.
You just take like one kidney.
If you take the stem cells or whatever.
See, then I'm sure the issue of consent.
Take one kidney.
You take the other baby, you throw it in the
trash.
Yeah.
You just
wait, when it's five, you chop it up. That is like horrifying.
Once you've banked the organs, you've been
exactly.
Then I'm sure
literally spare parts. Like what happens to your Polo when it gets stolen. People have the misconception that someone else drives it around. They don't. Bits of it end up as spares in other Polos.
Is the big thing around savior babies then being consent of, did this child have a choice in this? And
there's a lot of ethical debate around that, yes.
Sure. I don't think we're going to get into. We don't have time.
I can talk
this
for weeks
so cool.
on this.
Wow.
Yes.
I can listen for weeks on this.
I would
this.
Love to have you back to talk just about the ethical stuff and then also to discuss some of the new breakthroughs because I'm sure you've got plenty more to say.
Yeah, there's some very exciting stuff
I find
coming.
It fascinating that your life experience can affect your actual genome or your genetic predispositions and that you can then pass those traits on. So you can, by actively trying to be happy and more positive, you can create a healthier genome and pass it on to your kids. Wow. Same as your miserable bastardness can actually affect your children physically.
It's such a great
amazing
point. So some of our faculty actually talk quite a lot on that in the neuro space, and I find that space completely fascinating. So Adam Pantanovitz, who's one of our faculty members, he does a lot of work on the neuroscience side, but it's everything is so linked, and it's amazing just by positive mindset how much you can actually change.
Haven't they just recently found that gut health impacts really hard on mental health?
I read Dr. Perlmutter's book on that, Brain Maker, and I found it very interesting. I hope that's not like bullshit because it was very interesting.
No, so we're launching a test in the next few months, a microbiome test where you send in a sample of your feces,
your stool.
And it gets analyzed, and it's all the antimicrobial.
How much stool do you need?
It really is a bit gross to talk about, but they do transplants on that. Like they do transplants. Yeah. It's
how
a gross
stool?
Thought.
How much do I have to send you?
Like a little piece
a bar
of a
stool.
Teaspoon.
Or
not too much. But the trick is to try catch it when you dispose of it.
like a teaspoon of peanut butter.
Oh, come on now.
Even less.
Oh God!
The trick is collecting it. Trust me, it's not
because,
that easy.
Okay. Because I don't. But they test it, and then what can they do about it?
So people, so some people with seriously compromised microbiomes, where you have disease, so there are you can have
you
microbiome
get a
transplant. So they're making these pupils,
mm-hmm.
and you swallow someone yeah. else's microbiome.
I thought they actually took someone else's poop and put it in your bum.
No.
That's what I thought they
it's
do.
It's not as bad as that.
By the time it gets to that part of your gut, it's
you're
already
stuffed.
On its way out.
See, if it's a pill, I don't know, I'm still a little bit weird about a poo pill, but I will take a poo pill. I do not want someone else's put in me.
So they study, so like say of mice, they've taken the microbiome of a skinny mouse and transplanted that into a fat mouse, and that fat mouse has become skinny.
I legitimately want to check this out because, like, my lifelong issues with weight, I'm convinced, are from some very underlying thing. Because I've been, it's a boring story, but I've done as much honest soul searching and, you know, looking into it as possible, and I wasn't fiddled with or anything. This has always been me from my earliest memories, and I'm convinced something is like.
Your microbiome.
Genetically or my microbiome or something. I'm honestly asking a question. Is there like a way that possibly people with serious issues with weight can be like cured, for lack of a better word, through all of this?
So
where otherwise nothing's worked.
So we've seen it in animal studies.
I want thin person pupils,
well,
please.
Well, when we launch the test, you can come and give us a sample.
Kim, test everything
while
you like.
While we're on this matter, isn't it true that they've done, over years and years of genetic research, quite a lot of investigation into the fact that much of our genome is actually contributed to us by bacteria? That actually a large proportion of the total amount of DNA we have in us has been contributed by things that lived in us. I mean, I find that pretty bizarre.
Like mitochondria are like part of a symbiosis or something.
So those are energies in our cells.
Yeah, so mitochondria live inside your cells,
yes,
but they almost
come from somewhere else.
They might have, but they always come from the mother because the mother provides the egg cell, and in that are already some mitochondria. And as Kim said, they provide the energy. But they are a separate organism, effectively, that contributes energy to us. Their whole purpose is to make...
In the case of my mother, she also provides the egg salad. I'll just see myself out. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Anyway, look, there's so much to cover here. I don't want to keep you longer than we can. But next time, let's talk about the ethics around this because it's fascinating. And I just love the work you're doing.
Yes,
I'm amazed. You're based here in Midrand.
We're right up the road. And I have to say that we are doing our Singularity Summit in October.
Yes.
There's some fascinating subjects.
Are you going to be there speaking?
I'm going to be speaking on designer babies. Hacking sex and playing God is my topic.
Yes. I think this is the most fascinating stuff there is.
It's very exciting.
And when you want a guinea pig, a fat person, I'm your guy.
All right.
So
and
do
and
come
people,
to that.
How can they find out more about this? Is there a place they can go? Is there something that they can
do
online?
Yes, I think
online?
It's all online on the website, on the Singularity University South Africa website. There are tickets available. And honestly, I've spent fortunes over the years going to Singularity in California, which is amazing. It's a great experience. But you can get it all here in Kalami, and we attract some of the
can
best
you just
speakers
buy tickets?
In the world. Yes.
From what? Like CompuTicket or something?
So they're online on the website. And we do attract, honestly, some of the best worldwide speakers, especially because they get some extras of going to the bush. They love coming here.
Damn right.
We get phenomenal speakers. So it's worth every cent to go to the summit here.
And so what's that website?
Singularity University South Africa.
Singularity University South Africa. And we can get tickets from there.
Good, I'm not your nursemaid. You know how to use Google.
I could just ask. I could just get the web address. Right.
Okay, thank you. Gord Laws, thank you very much. Kim Hewlett, what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much for
this
your
is
time.
Great.
If you do develop the thin person pupil, Gord is...
Or you just want to experiment with me, I'm willing to risk being made three times as fat by this whole thing backfiring. I'm willing to risk it. You can test shit on me. You can illegally
I'm
test
just not
shit on
collecting your sample.
You can
off
the record illegally test shit on me. I'm excited. I might get bat wings.
All right. See ya. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you to you for joining us this morning. Very good. Lots of fun. Plenty to talk about. And we'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Fascinating lady.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
Yes, see.
Yeah. Very
Love
very
you, champions.
Cool.
Goodbye.
All right. Very nice. Gordo, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
This is CliffCentral.com.